Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What's up, Fungal Associates? Welcome to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Alex Croson. And as always, I'm here with an early morning Casey Clapp.
Hi.
That's not what I sound like in the early morning. It's also, it's not that early. I've been up for several hours.
No, it's not early. I've also been up for several hours. However, you know, usually when you come over to record, we spend about an hour getting to know each other and warming up our voices and our banter.
Yes, I have not warmed up my voice yet. This is what you get.
Yeah, sounds
Hello,
good.
Hello, everyone. I had one coffee today.
Same.
That's it. I tried to get another one on the way here, but there was a line out the door.
Wow.
All right. It wasn't technically out the door, but, you know, as the saying goes.
Sure. Yeah, there was more than four people.
Yeah, like surprisingly long for my local coffee shop.
I have a pretty low threshold for a line to turn
really?
Me away.
Oh my God, like how many people?
It depends on the place, I guess, but coffee shop, if there's more than like, I'd say more than three or four, I'm like, no, I'll get somewhere else.
Really?
Yeah, I just don't want to. Wow. I feel like an idiot standing there, you know?
I guess that's fair, but I have to say, like, what, I mean, how, what's the next closest coffee shop?
It's so hypothetical. You know?
Okay. All right. I see. Because I'm like, I'm here. I'm dedicated to it. This was my choice, and I will die in this line, or I will get coffee. Those are my options.
Wow. Get coffee or die trying.
Yeah. Usually, I think. Unless I'm like in a hurry and it's almost like, you know, all right, I'm going to stop real fast. Then then I might get in like today. I was like
today.
I might be able to squeeze this in. I'm going to do the research. I did the research and it came out negative. So
you did the computing in your robot's brain.
Yeah. But if I'm going to like stay there, do something, then I'm just going for it.
I'm the same way.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. This is
so it's that middle ground between necessary and staying there, or like, I'm sorry, not necessary, but like you're going to stay versus you're just stopping in,
you know,
the middle ground there.
Every decision requires so many minor decisions.
Yeah. Okay.
It's true what they say.
What do they say?
That every decision requires many minor decisions.
Yeah, that is what they say. You know, as they say, every decision requires many minor decisions.
I'm going to put that on my headstone.
I think you should.
Which will take me ages to decide on.
Every decision.
Casey, you know another place with long lines?
No, where?
The airport.
Oh, yes.
And on this episode, we're taking a trip to Sierra Leone.
Yes, indeed.
And we are talking about a very special tree on our summer vacation, episode 2.
Episode 2.
And that is the cotton tree of Freetown.
That's right.
Casey.
Alex Croson.
We have lots to say about this tree. From your description quickly to me, it is sort of a wonder tree.
It is kind of a wonder tree, yeah. You know, the more I looked into it, the more I wrote down about it. And the more I'm like, we got a lot to talk about.
Oh my God. With a, I will preempt this story does not have a happy ending.
Well, I think it does. I guess it depends on how you look. Well, okay. Yeah. You know, it depends on the perspective.
Yeah.
Because, you know what? We'll address that.
Hey, you decide for yourself. But first, we've got to take a quick break. We'll be right back with the Cotton Tree of Freetown here on Completely Arbitrary. Hi, everybody. Or should I say, hola a todos. I want you to hear something. It's this. Yes, that is the sound of learning a new language with Babbel. You have, of course, heard of Babbel. You maybe even used Babbel. But if you haven't, Babbel is an app that helps you learn languages. Babbel is a science-backed learning language app that actually works. Let me put it this way. I knew somebody who used a different language app for 365 days and still could not even have basic conversations in the language they were learning on that app. Babbel is not this. They have quick 10-minute lessons and they're handcrafted by 200 language experts so you can start learning a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Because it's designed by real people for real conversations. In fact, a recent study found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester at college. And of course, the best way to learn a new language is immersion. You go and live in the place where the people speak the language you're learning. You speak to the people, they speak back. But the second best way is Babbel. And it's practical. It will very quickly teach you how to order food, ask for directions, speak to shopkeepers without having to consult language apps while you're on vacation. And here is a special limited time deal for our listeners right now. Get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for Fungal Associates at babbel.com/trees. That's right. If you're listening to this, if you're a fan of this show, babbel.com/trees. Get 60% off your subscription. That's babbel.com/trees. Rules and restrictions may apply. Adios. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Hi, everybody. It's Alex here. And you know what? Come springtime, those trees are a-blooming. Those people are a-walking around. That sun is a-shining. And it makes me so grateful for my social life. People are wanting to do things again, and it can be extremely rewarding to start to see friends more often and, you know, go on cute friend dates or romantical dates, sit on a patio and drink a coffee. Ooh la la. But it's really easy to overdo it. And for me, it's very important to keep an eye on my social battery. Every time I go on a social outing, I come home and I'm like, wow, I am really tired in a very specific way. Well, that's my battery. That's my social battery being drained. And I didn't really have this language until I started going to therapy. I didn't know why being around people made me so exhausted, even though I love those people and enjoy being around them. But therapy helped me with my self-awareness and helped me unlock some language that I didn't otherwise have. And if you are struggling with feelings and thoughts that you don't understand, therapy can be a great way to unlock the power of understanding. And a great way to start is BetterHelp. It's completely online and it's designed to be super convenient and flexible, which is very important. How many times have you had a therapy session on the calendar and that time rolls around and you think, I gotta drive all the way across town. I am not gonna go. It has, of course, happened to me. I'm sure it's happened to everybody who's been in therapy. No worries with BetterHelp. It's all online. And all you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire. You get matched with a licensed therapist, of course. And nobody nails it on their first time. It's like going on dates. You gotta find the right therapist for you. It's silly to think that the very first date you ever go on is going to be your future spouse. So you can switch therapists at any time, no additional charge. It's extremely easy. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/trees today to get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/trees. Happy spring! Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. Today we are talking the cotton tree of Freetown, which we should say the species of this tree. That's not the species name.
That's right.
The species is kapok.
That's right. It's the kapok, otherwise known as, and I should be very specific here because I made this mistake multiple times, the silk cotton tree.
Silk cotton tree.
Not to be confused with the silk, I'm sorry, the floss silk tree.
Oh my gosh.
Why did they name it? Why did they do that? Like, I have to, before we go any further.
Wow. Is this a plant rant?
Silk cotton tree in floss silk tree.
Yeah.
What are those names? Like, what is that?
Like, it's like trying to keep track of, like, the movies in a big franchise.
Yeah, but they're, like, not even just, like, the floss-silk tree. The silk-cotton tree. Like, what is the... what? You're not even, like, building on a description. It's like right. saying, oh, well, that's the penny-nickel-quarter tree. It's like, what?
And that's the nickel-quarter dime tree.
Yes, exactly. It's like, what is the... Why can't you just give it a single name? So, kapok, so much better.
Oh, yeah.
And also, it's like, it makes sense. Even if you said, oh, this is the cotton tree. Excellent. Let's call it that. Why is silk in there? If it is the silk floss tree, like silk floss tree has more of a description first, like it's almost silky, and it's the floss tree.
Like, you know, floss-like.
What I mean? Yeah. So it's like, I guess I hate that. And I hate that they are like, they just like switched one word, then switched the order.
Yeah.
They, who are these they? I don't know, but I despise them.
It's the taxonomic Illuminati, Casey.
I guess so, but this isn't even, this is the folk taxonomic Illuminati.
Well, I think we should start a revolution.
I think we should.
And just call this kapok.
Kapok.
My favorite genre of
tree.
Tree.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's imagine, as we do every episode, Casey, that you and I are walking through downtown Freetown.
Yes.
Where this tree resides. Where this specific tree resides, the cotton tree of Freetown.
Yes.
And we come across it, and wow, is it big. I feel like I should be speaking in the past tense.
Oh, Alex. Yes. But that's okay. We'll explain later,
it's
everyone.
Just a teaser. Let's ID this tree.
Excellent introduction, Alex. So here's the thing.
Hey, you know what? I think they should call it Tree Town.
Wow.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Next up, we have Casey.
The worst open mic ever.
So the cotton tree of Freetown, otherwise known as the kapok, is a species in the genus Ceiba, which has about 20 species in it. And the one we are talking about is Ceiba pentandra.
Pentandra.
Yes. It means five stamen. Tandra.
Oh, so I'm assuming the flower of this thing has five stamen.
Yes, oh, that is exactly right.
What a deduction.
It's in the Malvaceae, which is the mallow family. So have you ever seen a hibiscus?
Sure. Well, I'm familiar with the marshmallow.
Yes. So that marshmallow comes from the root of a plant that's in the hibiscus family called the mallow.
Wow.
There you have it, Alex.
Fantastic.
So we make it differently now, but that's where the initial flavor kind of comes from.
Sure.
So that family has the hibiscus in it. So it has these big five-parted flowers that are really beautiful and magnificent. And the stamens are all put together. They're all fused together into a tube. So they kind of jut out from the flower.
Oh, interesting. I'm imagining like a pine needle bundle.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, yeah, yeah. They kind of opens up right at the very tip, you know, rather than the whole thing.
Sweet.
Yeah, nice. That's a really good, that's a good description, Alex.
I'm connecting dots, Casey.
The dots I am connecting, they are.
Well, let's talk about overall morphology, which is the place we usually begin.
So this is a big, big tree, Alex. Like, bigger.
I'm outstretching my hands.
Yeah, bigger than that. Yeah,
I love that's you about this right. much. That's about K-pop. Right.
Yeah, yeah. Where your fingers go out to infinity.
Yeah.
Or at least if you were to make a circle, that was going to be one. Anyway.
My mother used to say, I love you to the moon and back.
Oh, I love that. That's one of my favorite sayings.
I think that's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this tree, if you are in its realm, you feel like it's growing to the moon and back.
Wow.
Because it gets massive. Up to... Rather, I should say generally, you'll find it around 100 feet or so.
Okay.
Give or take. But generally speaking, it gets big, like 250 feet tall.
Wow.
Not only is it a giant tree, this tree, not explicitly the cotton tree of Freetown, mm-hmm. but other kapok trees get to be called the largest tree in Africa.
Wow.
I guess I should be more specific, Alex. Thank okay. you. The tallest tree in Africa.
Okay, not by volume.
Yes,
by
that height. Would actually, I think, go to the tree we're going to talk about next week.
Oh, my God.
No spoilers.
Settle down, children.
It's all right. Yeah,
hands in your laps.
That's like 77 meters tall, and it gets about 13 feet in diameter, about 4 meters.
13? Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's a big old tree.
That's a big old tree.
From what I see, this tree also grows outward quite proficiently.
It does. And so I tried to find the diameter of the cotton tree of Freetown, mm-hmm. and I could not find it because it said that the diameter is 15 meters. Now, 15 meters, essentially take a meter and multiply it by 3, mm-hmm. gives you a good estimate of what it would be in feet.
That's not what it is.
That's huge. It's like 50 feet around.
That would be the biggest
it would be huge.
Tree ever.
Exactly. So in diameter, that would be bigger than the tree we talked about last week, mm-hmm. which is outrageous to say the most. So we have to essentially do what Tobin did with another tree. I think it was the... Fitzroya maybe?
Hmm.
But he basically was looking through it and did some math, and he's like, that would be the single largest tree in diameter of all time.
Oh,
so they must be talking about circumference.
He myth-busted.
Exactly.
Myth-busted.
So I was like, okay, well, I'm going to look at this. So I think it might be the spread. So they give the height about 250 feet, and the spread of the canopy, I think, is about 50 feet.
The diameter of the whole the tree as a whole.
Yes, or it could be the circumference, but that is exactly what you were alluding to. The tree gets really big, wide,
mm-hmm.
but it also has big buttressing roots that come off the base of
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
So if you were just to do a diameter, it's like, well, where do you start? You have to go above the buttressing roots. If you're going to do a circumference going around, then that's also like you got to go up above these roots. So no matter how you look at it, it's a huge tree, probably easily 13 to 15 feet in diameter.
Mm.
And when you look at the spread of the roots as the buttressing roots come out, it could be almost twice that, maybe more.
It's like, a big boy.
It's crazy. Like, they're really beautiful trees. The classic, like, tropical morphology with these giant buttress roots, this huge monolithic stem.
Yeah.
And they are an emergent forest canopy tree in the tropics, which means their canopy grows up above the rest of the canopy, kind of maximum for the rest of all the trees around.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, they're huge trees.
The buttress base reminds me of a tree that we talked about, I think last year, the yellow carabine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's very similar.
Exactly. The one thing that you can kind of point to, the difference is the yellow carabine, they made buttressing roots that looked more like flying buttresses, which kind of are arched outwards. They're convex,
uh-huh.
whereas the ceiba trees, they have concave buttresses.
Casey's doing that thing with his hands where you're like doing the outline of a curvy body.
Oh, yeah. But I'm just showing what the tree's buttresses look like.
I saw that tree over there. It's like
this. Oh, my God. Casey, oh, my God.
That tree's dimensions.
Yeah, look at that tree's dimensions, baby.
Wow.
Yeah.
Casey.
Dirty.
Don't bring these realms together.
Yeah.
Casey, let's talk bark.
The bark, Alex, you know this bark. You've seen this bark. You've touched this bark.
Is it utility bark?
It is not utility bark. It's almost the opposite of utility bark.
Oh, my God.
At least when it's young. So, again, don't be confused. You all out there in the tropical, subtropical climes, you will be familiar with Ceiba speciosa, which is known as the floss silk tree. So that is a tree that Tobin Mitnick also talked about in his book, because I thought that these were the same trees for the longest time.
Wow.
And they are not.
Mm.
So they are the trees that have green bark that is covered from tip to tail with these giant thorny spines that are coming out.
Yeah, boy.
So these little spines cover the entire tree, and they can be upwards of like an inch long, but they look something like something you'd see in Star Wars almost. Like they don't look real. They don't look like they're actually meant to hurt anything because they're like too big.
Yeah, they're cartoonish. You know?
Yeah, they are. Exactly.
They have funny proportions.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, so as the tree gets older and bigger, they kind of fade into the bark a little bit. They kind of just disappear and the bark becomes a smooth gray color.
Hmm.
But when they're younger, they're green, covered in these spikes, and they actually photosynthesize.
I was going to ask.
You knew that.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing, though, is technically speaking, I believe they have prickles. Not spines.
Okay.
Now, I say this, Alex, because there are differences, which we've talked about before. I'll reiterate. Thorns are modified stem tissue. So thorns come out and they can actually have buds and leaves on them.
Hmm.
So that is stem tissue is a thorn. One example would be the citrus. Citrus plants have these thorns. Also, the honey locust has thorns. Then you have spines, and spines are modified leaves or stipules, which grow kind of at the base of a leaf.
Uh-huh.
So a spine would be something you would see on the black locust tree, where there's two little spines at the base of each leaf that comes out, and those would be stipular spines.
Okay.
Versus a prickle, which is a little tiny part that's more or less a hair. So it's kind of like a hair follicle or a cilia that kind of comes out from the dermis of the bark or the outside tissue of a plant. So that comes out, but you can break it off really easily because it doesn't, it's literally skin deep.
It's not a part of the stem.
Yes, not a part of the stem.
Like a thorn.
Exactly. And it does not come from a leaf or a modified part of a leaf.
Interesting. It's like pubescence. It's like really hardcore pubescence.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
And examples of that would be the rose. If you want to know the difference, if you try and break off the spine of, say, a honey locust, then it will break itself in half. It won't like cleanly break off.
Mm-hmm.
But on a rose, you can just go whomp, whomp, whomp and snap off those little things because, like I said, they're only skin deep.
And so the kapok is the same way? Those are prickles?
I believe so because I haven't found anything that has said or anything that looks like it shows that they have anything to do with the leaves or anything to do with new stem tissue growing out. So I think that they are just really big, intense, barky prickles.
Cool.
So anyway, just wanted to make sure that I covered that specifically because if I didn't, I would have regretted it.
Honestly, when you started that, I was like, oh boy, this is some subjective, he's just like proposing this new word for what this is.
Prickles are only an inch long and above an inch, they're a thorn.
And then you explained it and now I'm like, well, yeah, okay.
All right. Thank you. I'm glad that I at least did that. So I think in a technical sense, you know, they have different genesis.
Casey, let's talk leaf.
These leaves are gorgeous, Alex. They grow up and they are spirally arranged down the stem and they are palmately compound.
Hey, you know what I have to say about these leaves?
What?
They're pretty cool, man.
What? You think they look like pot leaves?
What? I wasn't saying that.
Yeah, I know. You weren't saying that, but it was said. You know what I mean?
They look like unserrated pot leaves.
Really?
With a clean margin. Of course. I think all palmately lobed leaves look...
Oh, that's all you see. Okay.
Something like a pot leaf. You know, because I'm such a stonehead, as they say.
You are stonehead. Yeah, yeah, that is what they say. Everyone says that all the time.
Uh-huh.
Just the same. Agreed.
Same as the Easter Island guys.
Yes, exactly. They do get stoneheads. Oh, Alex, you're so...
That was the equivalent, beautiful. Speaking of stones, of your Gladstone joke.
Yeah, it was. We're making a lot of stone jokes recently. So they are, I guess that's fair. I see that. They are palmately compound, which means they all come out, all these leaflets from one spot. So you have your petiole comes up and then boom, all at once, the veins radiate out as if they are on the spoke of a wheel.
Yeah, just look at your hand. That's why it's called palmate.
Precisely, Alex. You got that so right.
All your fingers come from your wrist.
Yeah, Whatever. Exactly, in a technical sense, yeah. Yes. So, right. Don't look too close into that. Right. It's just a mnemonic, everyone. So it is, yeah, they grow out there. They get pretty large. Like the leaflets get to be about 4 to 6 inches long. So in diameter, they're probably, the leaf itself would be somewhere around 12 inches, a foot or so.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, pretty good size, pretty beautiful. And they also are, like I said, alternately arranged. So they kind of spiral around the stem. And they're a very lovely green color. Their green color, though, is only temporary, as they will fall away because they are deciduous.
Really?
Yes, they are, again, drought deciduous.
Oh, drought deciduous. Yeah. Lowercase d.
We get all of our drought deciduous trees. No, I don't think that's drought. I don't think that should be a lowercase d.
I think it should be.
Really?
I think true deciduousness belongs to autumn.
Really?
It's my politician hand I'm doing.
Wow, yeah, you are. You're doing it. You got your thumb not quite pointed out, so it's not too offensive.
Yes,
not
too, but I'm making strong. My point.
Wow.
Obama popularized this.
Exactly. Actually, I think John Kerry popularized it.
Really?
Yes, I started doing that way back when John Kerry was running for president against Bush 2.
Crazy.
Yeah, I started doing that.
It was Bush 2, the sequel. Yeah. The squeakquel.
Not near as good as the original.
Yeah, I think true deciduousness, capital D deciduous, is what happens to leaves in the fall when they fall.
Huh, okay.
Drought deciduous, I just feel like it's I feel like it's stolen valor.
Wow!
I love using that phrase lately in things that doesn't really affect.
Such a hot take. Yeah. That is, yeah, I mean, it's a good phrase, so yeah. I can't believe this. Okay, because I mean, technically speaking, as we discussed, Alex, they're the same, it's the same process. It's just water, but you're sticking to it. It's a time of year kind of thing.
It's about intention, you know. Huh. It's about the reason for the season.
It's the reason literally for the season.
That's my political slogan about this. Yeah.
It's the reason for the season.
Yeah, deciduousness is the reason for the season.
It's why we call it fall, folks, okay? All right, Alex, okay. This is duly noted. I accept your stance.
Can I say Nick Weiger uses that phrase, stolen valor.
Yeah, okay.
Very wantonly in a bunch of funny scenarios. And somebody was telling a story about how they found a Burger King employee hat at Goodwill.
Yeah.
And were wearing it around. And he said that was stolen valor.
Stolen valor. Oh, God. Yeah, it's a bit much, but fine. We'll allow
so
it.
So funny.
Well, the flowers, Alex, as we talked about already, look a little bit like what you'd see if you went to Hawaii and you found a hibiscus.
Wow.
I don't know why, but I think maybe hibiscus has like, I think it might be like a state flower of Hawaii, maybe. I can't recall. But I always think Hawaii and hibiscus flowers. Then I started seeing them all over the place. There's a hibiscus species. We call it like... what is it? It's like a flower. It's like a flowering tree bush thing in Portland.
Yeah.
Hibiscus. And I see it all the time.
What is it?
I don't remember the name of it off the top of my head. It's like Mary's white flower. I don't know. It's something very uninteresting, but it's a nice thing. It's a nice, beautiful flower, but it is not a tree. It's planted as a street tree, but the city of Portland says nope. That is not a tree.
She's a bush.
Yes, they had to make a call on a few little trees, and that didn't make the cut.
Oh, sorry, hibiscus.
Yeah.
Mary's white flower.
Something like that. I know it's
Mary's
like,
virginal bloom.
Right? It'll come to me, and someone will listen to this and be screaming it at their headphones right now, and I'm sorry, you're right.
Email us. Hibiscus brackenridgii.
Brackenridgii.
Hawaiian hibiscus is the state flower of Hawaii. Casey.
There you go. Yes, I got that right.
Hibiscus is such a classic. I mean, I feel like it's culinarily, it's very popular. Lots of hibiscus in like cocktails and teas.
Yes, I actually had, it was in Mexico, and it's a certain kind of drink. Like it's almost like a lemonade thing.
Oh.
But I can't remember what it's called either. Oh my
like
God.
Like agua fresca?
No, it's not that. Like it has a, it's like a, Jamaica or something like that. Jamaica? It looks like it's the word Jamaica.
Himica?
Himica. Yeah? I don't know. Ani, you know what? As you're looking this up, I'm going to ask the world, what is a J in Spanish? Is it a huh? Is it a ya? I just don't know. I'm corrected all the time, and I feel like I'm corrected both ways all the time.
It's a huh.
Huh. Jamaica.
Yeah, so that's the Agua de Jamaica.
Okay, yeah.
Sorry for my terrible accent.
That's, hey, I'm not going to hold that against you because I'm trying to decide if it's a ja, a ya, or a huh.
Well, I think it's also a regional thing, Case.
God damn it.
Where the fuck were we? The flower.
Yes, the flower. Now, here's what's fun about this flower. It blooms at dusk. It opens at night, and then it usually falls away and is done by the end of about 24 hours.
That's so romantic.
Isn't that great?
I love that.
Yeah. Oh. And they're like creamy white, a little bit pinkish. They're not super huge. Maybe about maybe an inch across, inch and a half. Like they're kind of adorable. As opposed to our speciosa, Ceiba speciosa, the other tree that has something to do with silk floss and cotton. That tree, their flowers are a little bit bigger, so they really are like a pow when they flower.
So is this like part of a panicle or anything?
They're just
little flowers.
They're just little flowers. I guess they're kind of in clumps more than anything, but not necessarily all together as, you know, one big, huge thing.
But
they're all relatively close.
They're quite beautiful.
They really are. They're just kind of these nice little flowers that don't require that you see them, but they're just like, I'm here. And they smell like milk.
They're very confident. They smell like milk.
Smell like milk, yeah. Depending on how you feel, a little old milk.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, isn't that fun?
I don't love that.
Yeah, bats do, though.
They like old milk?
Bats and moths, all those things that fly at night and pollinate things, they are loving it.
You love old milk. No, yeah. I don't. Shut up. Take it back.
And they fly into the night.
I will say that these have that classic hibiscus flower shape.
They do, yeah.
Where the petals will kind of come out and curve back on themselves a little bit.
Yeah, right.
They're very like...
Yeah,
they really
it's like
present
yeah,
themselves.
They do. They're really just they're asking to be pollinated.
Good confidence. Yeah, they really
good
are.
Good confidence is right, Alex.
Yeah.
This tree exudes confidence.
And
it has
its, you know, prickles, which I think is like another sign of confidence. It's like, I'm doing my thing. Don't fuck with me.
Stop. Just get out of my way.
Yeah.
Precisely. I agree.
Wow.
Now, another thing about this tree is it's native to several different places. It's native to central and south, like very southern North America. It's like essentially southern Mexico down into northern South America.
Panama?
Yeah, exactly. Like all, in fact, I think it's like you can even find it native in Ecuador, like all the way down into Peru and some of the kind of intense areas of the rainforest of the Amazon, as well as the Caribbean islands, all the islands out in that kind of section of the world.
Oh, wow.
And over on the other side of the Atlantic, over where we're talking about Sierra Leone in West Africa.
This is a globetrotter.
It really is. I thought that was very curious, and they found that it is native over there because they've found pollen that shows it's been there for about 13,000 years.
Okay.
So some people said, well, then people brought it over, and it turns out, nope, they didn't. It was there before anyone went from South America to North America.
Interesting.
And the reason that we can say with confidence, other than this study, is the fruit, Alex.
I was going to ask if this grows a fruit.
I figured you were.
Well, tell me yes or no. I don't want to get into a whole thing.
Yeah.
But does every plant that grows a flower also grow a fruit?
Yes.
Okay.
Great question. So this is like, it's the funniest fruit. I don't know why. It just tickles me. They look like giant, or not even giant, just normal size avocados.
Oh, yeah.
And they grow down. They're very, very like lime green. And they look like this kind of, this drop that looks like it's really big, viscous kind of green fluid that kind of just hardens in this almost skinny teardrop kind of fashion. It's oblong and it's about 6 inches long and it has a little bit of point on both ends and it ends up kind of growing down like this teardrop. Then it ends up getting a little bit fatter, but not super fat. That's one thing that kind of keeps this species separate from others is that it kind of stays like a skinny avocado.
Yeah.
And then when ripe, it turns brownish to blackish and it splits into 5 sections, which makes sense because remember the leaves have, or the flowers rather, have parts in 5, which means there's probably 5 individual carpels inside the flower, each of which has seeds inside, each of which then produces this one sectioned chamber that then splits into 5 parts. This fruit is fantastic. When it pops open. It is filled to the brim with these cellulose and lignin made hairs. And these little hairs look like these little fuzzy things surrounding the seeds, mm-hmm. not connected to the seeds, just surrounding the seeds. And these little things are the reason that we give it the name, the cotton tree.
It looks like a cotton ear of corn.
That's a perfect description. Mm-hmm. Yes. They're filled with probably about 100 seeds or, you know, I think, yeah, there's like many, many seeds inside these things. Each one of those seeds are connected, or not technically connected, but they're surrounded by this cotton. And this cotton is waterproof and it is buoyant. It has a high heat capacity and it is oleophilic is the term. So you have hydrophobic and oleophilic.
Which means that it attracts oil.
Exactly. It loves oil. Mm. So this is a fun like thing that I didn't really know about. But it turns out they used to harvest this because a given tree could make like 800 or more of these fruits. Like so many fruits that you're just like, oh my God, there's cotton everywhere. Because remember, these trees get 250 feet tall and, you know, several hundred feet wide if they want. Maybe not several, but at least 50 to 100 feet wide. So you have these giant trees filled to the brim with these fruits, which are filled to the brim with these fuzz. They would harvest that and use it in everything from pillows to jackets to sleeping, like blankets.
Sure.
They would fill their mattresses because it's insect and rodent resistant. They don't like it. It floats, so you would put it inside of flotation devices. Mm. I heard a video, Alex, that if all the people who were on any of the ships during the Titanic's age.
Right, the what are they called?
The life vests?
The lifeboats.
Yes. Wait, no, the life vests.
Right, but you're saying any of the ships, and I'm calling them lifeboats.
Oh.
Because there was one ship called the Titanic, and had many little ships around it called lifeboats, which had life vests on them.
Alex, that was such a stretch.
What? No.
You're being serious?
Yes.
Oh, well, I'm talking about the ships filled to the brim with all their, like, the big ships that are like the Titanic. Like
Mean big... Big, like, steamer ships in general.
Any ship that had a life vest on it.
I thought I thought you were talking about the lifeboats on the Titanic.
Oh, no. The vest that the people were wearing.
I know.
and they're on every big ship of
any
sort.
Yes, yeah, yes.
Not just on the lifeboats.
What just happened?
I don't know. I don't know how you got so confused there. But we're back. We're together, Alex. We're together.
You're saying that these were used in life vests.
That's it. Yeah, that's what I should have said.
In the era of the Titanic.
Exactly. So this fun fact was that the people who were on the Titanic ended up having, they were probably wearing life vests packed with Kapok cotton.
Yes. I can also see this being a great kind of insulator for your home.
Yes, they used it for insulation too. Yeah.
Keeps the rodents away, it, you know, keeps the warmth out.
Yeah. The one problem is it's very flammable. Cuz it's basically just made of cellulose. Not basically. It's like 99% cellulose.
Oh, okay.
Which is just essentially wood fiber that we burn.
Well, maybe don't make your house with it.
Yeah. But, you know, if you got a wooden house, what's the difference?
Hey, good point, man. Yeah,
it's all going to work somehow.
It's going to go up anyway.
So, yeah, it's just like the coolest, like, interesting stuff. And I had no idea that it would be so useful. Today, everything is now made with essentially foam or some other kind of floaty bit, which 90% of the time, like I said, is made out of some petroleum-based thing. Which
right.
is a bit of a bummer.
Synthetic stuff.
Yeah. I mean, imagine, like, you make a life vest or you make a floaty and it pops off your boat and then it just decomposes a couple years later because it's made out of natural fibers.
Mm.
I don't know. Maybe it's a good idea.
Yeah.
You don't want it to like decompose and like, you know, disintegrate while you're actively using it. But
it's like you have on your to-do list, like for your home, you'd be like, I gotta mow the lawn, I gotta replace the life vests.
Yeah, before it gets, you know, just decays out. Yeah. That like fix your deck.
Casey, is there any sort of like fleshy edible part of the kapok fruit?
Not that I know of, no.
Okay.
In fact, I only know that the people historically have eaten like the tips of the shoots and sometimes the leaves get put into stuff and
You know, the bark is brewed in a diuretic tea.
Yeah, exactly. So it's got like some things, and the seeds have often been used and eaten. But I've read multiple things. One says that the seeds are poisonous. The other says that the seeds are not poisonous. Mm,
it's like an arsenic thing, like apple seeds.
No, it's not arsenic. It is something different. But I'm sure it's okay. Doing the same thing.
Sure.
It's just, it happens to be that it is just something that you can either roast and eat or not eat. Like, I just can't tell. I couldn't find anything that said one way or another.
Interesting.
But I can tell you, this tree is generally not grown as a food crop or a food tree. It has other purposes.
This is like a utility tree in the best way.
It is, like, in almost every way. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know that it's quite the level of like a tree of life, but it's probably on the way. I mean, every trees can be a tree of life, so I don't know. Probably.
Well, I think a tree of life requires, and this is, listen, I'm of English descent living in the United States of America, but I think a tree of life, let me give you my opinion on this.
Yeah, please. We want it.
I think a tree of life requires edible parts.
Oh, really?
Well, I guess the Western Red Cedar, I don't know if they...
Exactly.
Yeah, maybe not.
Yeah, so I don't know. That's what I had that same thought. And I was like, well, I don't know that needs to be a definitive characteristic. It can just be a tree that is so integral to your life. Not necessarily that you eat it, though.
Could the kapok be that?
I think so.
Mm.
But then again, like I said, there's a spectrum, and I'm sure there's another tree that grows in the same regions as kapok grows that is far more useful for a lot of different things. The nani is a great example. You probably find the nani growing in these same regions.
Oh, okay.
And that tree, they're like, yeah, we use that for everything.
Yeah, but the nani isn't full of cotton.
Exactly.
You know?
Takes a village.
Yeah.
It takes a forest.
Wow, Casey.
There you go.
It takes a forest.
So let's talk a couple facts about this tree.
Bumper sticker idea.
It takes a forest.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, hey, everyone out there, raise your hand if you want a bumper sticker that says it takes a forest.
Yeah, hit that like button.
Yeah. Tell us. So here's some interesting facts that I found while researching this tree.
Oh yeah.
I want your opinion on some of these.
Okay.
It is, like we said, an emergent canopy tree.
Mm.
So it grows really big. I learned that it is the tallest tree on Africa, like on the entire continent of Africa,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty cool. It's very big. That is a tree that is about 250 feet tall. The tallest one in Africa.
The tallest specimen of the kapok.
Yes, okay. Exactly. Gigantic tree. Now, I was like, hold on a second. Someone's saying this is like maybe one of the biggest, tallest angiosperms just outright.
Wow.
So I was like, oh, I thought that was a eucalyptus. So I went down a quick little rabbit hole.
All right.
And it turns out that the biggest tree historically, which we've talked about, is Centurion, a swamp gum Eucalyptus regnans. That used to be 327 feet tall. And 5.9 inches, which is, for those of you out where this tree would be growing, 99.82 meters.
That's a big old boy.
I'm sorry, Alex, that was a big old boy.
Oh,
it's not dead. The top in 2014, I think, in 2020, ripped out. So now it's only 96 meters, 314 feet.
Why would you do that?
Hey, nature's rough, baby, as we'll talk about later.
Oh, yeah.
So now the tallest angiosperm, or rather, I guess I should say, and or the tallest tree in Asia, and or the tallest tropical tree,
mm-hmm.
is a Shorea Faguatiana, otherwise known as the Yellow Maranti or Yellow Maranti, which is named Manara. It's located in Sabah, Malaysia on Borneo.
Whew.
At 323 feet tall, 98.53 meters.
God damn.
Yeah. So an unknown tree, a tree that was in the backwaters of botanical, who knows,
yeah.
is it the tallest? Don't care. Is now the champion Isn't that great?
This is like when the towers fell and Trump was like, Trump Tower is officially the tallest building in New York City.
Oh, geez. I disagree with that.
Okay, this is like when...
you're calling this beautiful tree from...
I can do better. This is like when John Goodman in that movie about King something, where he like all the royal family dies in a tragic accident and he's the nearest relative, but he's like a bumpkin. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's fair. I don't know. I don't know. I want to give this tree some credit in its own. It's a giant tree. It's not a bumpkin. It's Menara. Alex is like, well, if you're not a eucalyptus, you're just some backwater dummy.
That's not what I'm saying.
That's what you said.
Listen.
Verbatim.
None of my analogies have anything to do with reality, okay? They just make me laugh.
It's like when the moon became the biggest planet because Jupiter exploded. Yeah, that's right. That's right, Alex.
Just let me have my fun, goddammit.
So that is, so now it is, I think the KPOC would be about... I would be willing to bet it's not even close to the second or third tallest.
Sure.
Because, of course, Regnans would be the second tallest. There's probably other eucalyptus that are gigantic.
But hey, if we're getting a fucking, diplomat of tallest trees from each continent,
yes,
it's showing up to the party.
Exactly. This would be one of seven.
That's very impressive.
So impressive.
Yeah.
So this tree, not to mention, I mean, just the fact that it's so gigantic all the time.
Yeah.
I just love it. Because this is one difference. The eucalyptus and this Menara tree, they just kind of grow straight up.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas our ceiba tree,
right,
it's wide.
I love a tree that is not only tall, like a really, 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 really tall, like ponderosa pine.
Yeah.
Or like Jeffrey pine or something.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Or Douglas fir even. Like doesn't do much for me.
Yeah, okay.
It's like, they have their strategy. They're just like, whew,
yeah,
shooting straight up.
Let's go for it.
But a big, tall, broadleaf tree that's also like... fucking, you know,
wide.
20 meters wide in its canopy, like a big beach or something,
is
so much more impressive to me, even if it doesn't reach the heights
of
the pine tree.
I think this is 100% accurate.
So this tree has a lot going for it for me.
It does, right?
And not to mention the fact, I know we're getting into like opinion review territory here, so I'll skirt the outskirts.
Yeah, you touch your toe in there.
Yeah, I'm going to dip my toe in this water. It's also a utility tree, you know, heavily utility tree. We're talking like bordering on the edge of a tree of life.
Yeah.
Plus its size.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a two for two.
That's something.
That's right? Something, Casey.
Exactly. Now, another fact.
Yeah, hit me.
We have buttressing roots.
I love this
roots.
Format. This is great.
Yeah, I'm glad you're liking it.
Yeah.
So we got another, it has these buttressing roots, right, mm-hmm. we talked about? Mm-hmm. So one thing about these buttressing roots is that many people would look at them and think that they are holding the tree up in a compression style.
Hmm.
So you have a big string kind of coming out, or a big like a wide foot kind of thing. So like our feet are angled in front of us. So when we lean forward, our feet are the things that like hit the ground and our muscles hold us up as we lean forward, mm-hmm. right? Not so with this tree. Angiosperms put wood on the tension side of places, of their stems and their roots and their branches.
The yang.
Yes.
So that means on the back side?
It means that these are more like guy wires. So they are holding the tree from falling the opposite direction, as opposed to pushing it in the direction that the root is on.
Oh, they're pulling.
Exactly.
Oh.
Exactly. So imagine it like the tree's growing up and it has a bunch of cables pulled out. The cables provide, this reference only goes so far because the trees also provide a pretty significant amount of compression strength.
Mm.
But their main purpose, like if we're saying, well, why are these developing like this? It's because the tree is putting on more tension wood where it's getting pulled. And then you develop those long buttressing roots, which in effect... imagine them as cables pulling down. So whenever a tree leans to the north, it's the buttress root on the south
right.
that is doing most of the work.
So if you cut the cable, so to speak, on the south, the building, so to speak, the tree, so to speak, would fall north.
So to speak, correct. cool. Yeah, so that's fun. And these buttressing roots can get like 20 feet, like 7 meters out from the tree.
Really?
Yeah, and they go up like 10 or 15 feet. Like, so they're huge.
Those are definitely roots.
Yeah, they're they are the buttressing baits. So they're, at the end, they go down and become main roots.
Uh-huh.
But the wood that's being put on top is probably more akin to your normal stem tissue than explicitly roots.
Because
roots are different in a anatomical sense than the rest of the stem tissue.
Right, right.
But there is this kind of transition between the two. They are kind of the transition between the two.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So I can't tell you 100%. Once they're in the ground, they're roots and they grow as roots with root things. Once they hit the stem, they are stems doing stem things with stem anatomical parts.
Wow.
Where those two cease, don't really know. All right, Alex, there's another part of this tree that is going to dovetail into the tree that really we want to talk about, which is the cotton tree of Freetown.
Yes.
This tree is a very spiritual tree. Now, I believe you've also done some research on the spirituality of this tree.
Well, I know of one myth.
Yeah, what is that?
So, Casey, the myth that I know about this tree comes from Trinidad and Tobago. As a part of their folklore, there's a tree, a huge kapok tree deep in the forest.
As you would expect.
As you would expect. A big boy that they call the Castle of the Devil, which is just amazing. My favorite death metal album.
Yeah.
In that castle tree lives Basil or Basil. Basil, potentially.
I like Basil.
Yeah, Basil sounds less like the herb.
Yeah.
The demon of death. And they wanted to trick the demon into getting imprisoned inside this tree. So a humble carpenter built 7 rooms in this tree, and they tricked the demon of death to go inside one of them, locked the door, walked away.
Nice. Dropped it in the river.
I would say it's best just to not go near this tree, just in case.
Yeah, and I bet you it has a lot to do with the spikes that are all over it. So you're like, ooh, that tree's got some demon in it, baby.
That's the barbed wire of this tree's prison.
Yeah, or that I guess I was imagining it like you walk in and you see this tree covered in spikes, and you're just like, okay, something evil about that tree.
Yeah.
I'm not going to mess with it, but I am going to eat these seeds, something like that.
And the cotton is the cloth off the demon's back.
Nice, which we harvest, and it helps us stay alive.
Yeah, this is now fanfic. This is not part of the actual myth.
Yeah. But yeah, and there's a lot that has to do with that kind of myth of like, because it blooms at night and bats come and visit it, there's more myths about the tree itself having this power with these like deities of death and that kind of thing that like only come at night, you know, and stuff like that.
It's really a tree that characterizes itself.
It does, right? It's like the dragon tree where it like bleeds red.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's like there's no question. Yeah, that's sick. We're gonna do something with that.
Yeah,
you know, says the cultural deciders of myths.
Yeah,
but so this tree, you know, that has this spiritual base already.
Mm-hmm.
Has a spiritual base in like several different cultures, which I think is curious, like African cultures, Caribbean cultures, and Central American cultures.
Yeah.
Which is cool. You can't really see any like native myths about these different things. Maybe again, the Nani, because it grows in places that are so vastly kind of apart from each other.
Right.
So those cultures develop 100% distinctly from each other, but then still make similar myths about these trees.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see how similar, you know?
Yeah, right? That would be the real thing. We'd have to do way more looking into it, and I bet you we'd also need to look at other species that have similar morphologies that grow in other places as well.
Okay.
And then we could start to really put together, like, okay, all of these trees are similar in this one way, and all these people viewed them in the same way.
Yeah, that's a project.
Yeah, we got some anthropologists who are looking to get a master's degree. There you go.
We got to call up Joseph Campbell.
Yes.
Out of his grave.
For sure. Why that?
The Joseph Campbell was an anthropologist, author, legendarium kind of guy.
All right.
He discovered that independent of each other over thousands of years, thousands of cultures developed essentially the same story arc.
Really?
It's called The Hero with a Thousand Faces. This is his book on that. The Hero's Journey. Have you heard of this?
Wow. No, I don't think so.
Oh, well, every movie you've ever seen uses this, this trajectory.
Huh?
Yeah. Isn't that incredible?
That is amazing. All right. Yeah. Sweet. I'm going to gotta look into that. Well, the main tree that we're talking about.
Yeah.
Contry of Freetown, as we've said. You're familiar with this. You've looked it up.
Yeah.
Everyone else has by now, I hope, looked it up.
It's a beauty.
Or you just are so good at listening that you're like, oh yeah, I can identify that tree. I don't even need to look it up.
Actually, maybe don't Google it until the end of the
show. Don't Google it until the end. The cotton tree of Freetown is this gargantuan 230-some foot tall tree that, again, as we said, was probably somewhere around the 13 feet diameter realm with these huge fluted bases. It's right in the middle of a square in the middle of Freetown, Sierra Leone. Sierra Leone is a country that's on the southwest side of the nose of West Africa. So it's a very tropical place. It has mostly tropical savanna, has some tropical forest. And this tree,
on the coast also.
Yes, it's right on the coast.
Yeah, and Freetown is like the coastal city.
Exactly. It's a big coastal city. It's the capital. And it's called Freetown because it was founded by a group of freed slaves that were brought back over to Africa as a part of one of the most interesting histories I've ever read about a country.
Wow, I cannot wait.
So you're familiar with colonization, right?
Yes.
So this is like colonization in a weird, unique, reverse yet not reverse way. So normally you'd have a European power go down to a place where other people already live and say, this is ours now and you are our people and you're not really our people. We just want you out. And they would take over their land, their resources, all these things. They would also historically use those people as slaves and they would sell them away. West Africa was very much this, the basis of this, the triangle slave trade, where you would go from European countries to West Africa, pick up people who've been sold into slavery, transport them over to the Caribbean or the south of the United States, and then sell them, and then take the money or take the goods that you bought, and then go back to Europe with that, and then start the triangle all over again.
Wow.
And we go multiple different directions.
When you put it in such simple, plain terms, it's really heartbreaking.
It is. It's just, it's like pure economics with human life, you know?
Yeah, it's fucking evil.
Yeah, it really is. And so what happened is during the Revolutionary War, slaves in America, or in what will become America, United States of, they basically said, we're with you, Britain, and we're asking for your protection. We'll help you fight the American colonists. So England ended up saying, okay, fine, you guys are with us, and if you fight with us, we'll give you your freedom. And then they ended up resettling people because, as it happens, the United States won, so all the people who were enslaved, who fought on the British side, were going to still be slaves. Which is fun to think about when you're like, yeah, the American Revolution, great, they fought for all these things, freedom and liberty and all that stuff. Except, if the British won, then we probably would have had slavery be abolished in 1807.
Yeah.
Because that's when everyone else in the English colonial system, which is their, you know, essentially the entire world at the time, they were all... It was all deemed illegal.
Interesting.
Yeah. So if the British won, then we would have had slavery be abolished 65 years before it actually happened.
Wow.
60 years, I should say. So, yeah. So that kind of colors the revolution in a fun light when you look at it that way.
That is interesting.
So, didn't happen. History moves on. And all of these formerly enslaved people were living in Nova Scotia. And there's still, you know, racism all over the place to this day. Back then it was just as bad or very likely far worse, even in places where slavery was no longer the best option or even the preferred option, or it was outright banned. So they were having a bit of trouble in Nova Scotia. They ended up getting on a boat, and the government of England at the time basically said, how about we repatronize these African people back to Africa.
Wow.
And make it into a tiny little colony using them.
Okay.
It's one of those things where I smile because I'm like, those cheeky bastards.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the people that were doing this in like recolonizing this other area were essentially like being sent back to the place that they had come. So it kind of has this air of like, we're going to send you back to your homeland because this is, you know, this would be the right thing to do.
Oh, and by the way, you're now colonizing this area for us.
Exactly. But it was kind of like everyone was kind of on the same page. Like, okay, yeah, that sounds great. We'd love to go back and make our own life with our own land in our home country.
So it was a British colony populated by African expats.
Pretty much.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, I think that very much simplifies it. And, you know, there's links to it. In fact, Wikipedia, of all the things I found, had the best history.
Hell yeah.
So definitely go to the Wikipedia page and read through this. The thing is, there's a lot of nuances. And a couple years later, some people from the Caribbean came. They're called the Maroons, and they were Afro-Caribbean people. Mm. But these people were all in these other colonies in, you know, the North and South in America and Caribbean for at least several generations, many of them. So their cultures were very much transitioned to this kind of, you know, this new world kind of culture as to what they were expecting. Then they transitioned and send all these people back. And I should also iterate, the people who were enslaved were not from one spot.
Sure,
they were from all over Africa, specifically the West Side.
Yeah, being sent, quote, back to Africa is like, you know, for you or me who are living in Europe and we were sent back to the United States, if we're from Portland, we could be sent to like Miami.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, well, this is not where I'm from. What are you doing? So there's this weird, you know, like dichotomy where there were already people who were natively living in this part of Africa. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's always people living almost everywhere for many thousands of years. So these people, a couple different ethnic groups, and then they brought in all these other people. They looked similar, but also they didn't. They had all these, you know, these different ethnic things because it's just like all people look slightly different depending on maybe where they're from. Everyone has like little bits about them. Mm-hmm. So you would bring back these people who had these cultural differences, and they started living in this place, and it was essentially a colony of Africans in Africa that was working with Europeans to kind of make it happen.
Wow.
So it's very like the nuances are very curious, but the big thing is that they named this city Freetown because they were freed enslaved people, formerly enslaved people.
Yeah.
They moved over here and they started this thing, and it was this important space because maybe from the English side, they were like, well, great, we can get rid of these poor black people from London streets and we can send them down here. We can get rid of these people who no one wants because they, you know, don't want black people in their area, and we can take them from Nova Scotia and send them over here. Mm. And at the same time, we can probably make a little bit of money from this and have some of these other things happening.
Wow.
And do some trade. So the British might have had this, and when I say might, read probably most certainly, had that in the back of their brain. They were solving several different cultural racism problems all at once.
Wow.
But...
Well, yeah. I don't know if removing black people solves racism.
No. But it was solving that problem. It's a problem based on racism.
Yes. Okay, sorry.
So they were like, great, this is a great solution for this, you know, these issues we're having right now.
Wow.
Cheerio. They would send him over.
Great impression.
Thank you. But here's the fun thing that makes this, I think, that really adds the importance is that the people who are actually moving over there had their hearts set on being free and making their own way with their own land.
Yeah.
So they did it. Like, they named this place Freetown because whatever of these socioeconomic things are going on over in, you know, the other colonizing spaces, they were getting theirs way better than what they were getting in Canada, way better than what they had in the Caribbean or in the United States, where they were either enslaved or really, really prejudiced against and probably didn't own much of their land. And what land they could own was probably not the best because it's whatever the other rich people didn't want.
That's interesting. And their new society, I'm assuming, was majority black.
Yeah, it was. But there were also still white people there that were still doing the same shitty white colonist things that you'd get. In fact, when the British would come over, they would have ships outside of the Freetown Harbor, and they would catch any slave ships that were sailing out, and they would recaptive the people who were in there and then sell them back to, like, as freed people, sell them back to other white people that were needing apprentices. So it was like the terminology and exactly how it works, it was very, very squishy.
Yeah.
But suffice it to say, whether or not the beginning was savory or unsavory, depending on who you're talking to, the people there and over time the population and the kind of national culture of Sierra Leone became what it is today. In 1961, they got their independence. They've had all the troubles that every other country has had, from many different kind of new constitutions to how many political parties are we going to have. They had a massively impactful civil war between the mid-90s and early 2000s.
Oh, wow.
Like, really bad. You can look at a graph of their population, and it's going up, and then it flatlines and goes down, oh, and then starts going back up again.
Wow.
So you could probably see the same thing with the American Civil War,
yeah,
where there's, you know, I think 6 million people? No, 600,000. People died there.
This is the most costly war in American history.
Exactly. So you got to say, okay, you know, we know no place is perfect, but after this, the end of the Civil War, they have just got it going. Like, they wow. have everything set up. There's still problems, you know, because Africa has a very small amount of investment as compared to other parts of the world.
Mm-hmm.
But this tree was growing there before the colony existed in first place. In 1797 or 1787, there's records that say this is the tree. People would go to this tree and they'd pray underneath it because they were Christians, because they came from what was a Christian part of the United States. Then they would come back. They would also be working with and trading with the native peoples who, this is another fun fact, Alex, the native peoples who were there, the Timne, they sold their land, again, in probably an unsavory deal. They didn't know how much they were actually selling.
Yeah.
And they would sit there and look at the tree in all directions, and whatever they could see from that tree, that was their territory.
Cool.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
So there's a...
Oh my God. That's really profound.
Isn't it? Yeah.
In terms of the sort of cultural importance of this tree.
It crosses all these different iterations.
Yeah.
To the point where even in May of 2023, this is still the most important symbol of the people of Sierra Leone.
Yeah.
It is the thing that's on their money, their national museum.
Really?
A very important thing. Oh, yeah.
The tree is on their money.
It's on their paper money, yeah.
Holy shit.
The museum.
That might be the most... dude, we've talked about... Sorry to interrupt you.
No.
That we've talked about culturally significant tree hall of fame. You know, like, there's like... We've talked about like the pomegranate and like the tree of life. For a capitalist society to put a tree on its money...
Yeah.
I mean, that might be the most...
That's so curious, because I know a lot of places still do that.
Really?
They have on trees. Lebanon's an example on their flag.
Oh, sure.
Canada's got a maple leaf on their flag.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
We have on our quarter, we have, was it the Connecticut State Quarter has an oak tree on it?
Well, that's a state quarter.
Yeah, okay, yeah. This is like on their, you know, their paper money. Yeah.
Right.
So I totally agree with what you're saying.
Wild.
But I'm sure that there's other money that has trees on it somewhere. I haven't looked... So much.
It'd be fun to look into.
Yeah, I got to look at more currency.
You know, I think like we should go to a break soon, but I think the biggest signal to me of the importance of this tree, or one of the biggest, I guess, post the colony,
yeah,
is that they literally built the city around the tree.
Yeah, they did.
In a time when not much regard was given by the imperialists for like the matter of the land, you know,
yeah,
like they saw this tree and they didn't think, let's fucking cut that down and sell the timber.
Yeah.
They saw that tree and thought, let's build, you know, let's respect that and just build a city around it. You know,
yeah,
it'll be like the center of the town.
It's exactly right.
Wild.
Yeah. So it made it through all of these things. It was probably about 500 years old, Alex.
Wow.
Made it through everything except a giant windstorm. We've been bouncing between is and was this whole time because we don't want to give it away.
We don't want to admit that it's true, but the Cotton Tree of Freetown was just demolished.
It imploded in a windstorm.
In May?
In May of 2023, yeah. So I said earlier May of 2023 because I wanted to say it made it up to that point.
Yeah.
This tree was living and crushing it.
It looks like there was a explosive planted halfway up the stem.
Yes.
It looks blown up.
It does. Like it shredded itself when it fell apart. So it's very tragic and it is pretty significant. Like every news story, like international news, covered this because this would be like the Statue of Liberty blowing over in the windstorm. Like it is such a huge monumental loss.
National tragedy.
It's a national tragedy. I think it's more than that. I think this is more like a continental tragedy. You know?
Just a natural tragedy too.
It really is. But the tree had been a little bit hollow. People often had been living because it's kind of like a town square. So it was where everyone met. They would be sitting up, you know, on the root area. They built this big road around it, you know, years ago. And there's actually a couple different times that whole inside like lit on fire. So it was hollow. And there's a picture that looks like there's just a stove just going woof inside of it.
What the like it's a furnace?
Yeah, exactly.
How did this happen?
I don't know. Nobody knows exactly how the fires got set.
Oh my God.
But you know, who knows? You know, maybe it's just someone sitting there, it's a cold night, and they make a little fire next to it.
I know why.
Why?
The demon was trying to escape.
It was probably the demon. Oh my hellfire. God, Alex. Now that's something I gotta think of.
Yeah, tragic. I mean, that's like, yeah, I am not a citizen of Sierra Leone or Freetown or a native of that land, but I still felt it in my gut when we saw those pictures, Casey. Yeah,
and the worst part is we wanted to cover this tree for a good while. We've been planning to do this kind of thing. So by the time we did it, it was just a couple months too late.
We waited a little too long.
Yep, almost exactly 1 month.
But I will say, and I mean this with no irony or anything, I would like to dedicate this episode to that tree.
That sounds great, Alex. Yeah.
And our cone score. Sorry that it's so tacky. but we got to do that after a break. We'll be right back with our review of the K-pop here on Completely Arbitrary. Alex here. Here's a little something about me. I love to be cozy. Coziness is of utmost importance to me, and I am in a constant search for coziness. And that is why we present to you Cozy Earth. Cozy Earth makes luxurious bedding and clothing products. And what do I mean by luxurious? Let me tell you this. I now have Cozy Earth sheets on my bed. I wear a full Cozy Earth sweatsuit to bed, and I have been getting the best sleep of my life. It is quite literally the softest material I've ever put on my body, and my skin is so happy in it. I usually have a little bit of a sensory thing. I don't like things touching my skin. Clothes are tough, but with Cozy Earth, I am treated to superior softness, unparalleled fabric, materials, and weave. This is a real endorsement. It's the most comfortable material to ever grace my birthday suit. And guess what? You deserve this coziness too. So treat yourself to the ultimate in comfort and indulgence with Cozy Earth bedding and sleepwear. And you know what? Completely Arbitrary listeners, A little inside detail here. You all get 35% off at CozyEarth.com with promo code TREES. That's TREES for 35% off at CozyEarth.com. Now you go and get cozy.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. That was our discussion on the K-pop. Casey, it's time for our, I was going to say our favorite segment, but...
This is my favorite segment.
It's a segment that happens.
Well, I guess I should say, it is my favorite, but the whole thing is my favorite because the idea is that you give your opinion at this point.
Yes.
And I love giving my opinion, but, you know, I give my opinion all throughout. So it's kind
of
nice.
This is a nice little encapsulation. This is, of course, our Golden Cone Score Review segment.
Correct.
I sound like this is our first day doing this.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Completely Arbitrary. Here's how it works. It's like, wait, we've listened to literally hundreds of episodes.
Casey, just for fun, I would like you to introduce the review section.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Casey Clapp, Completely Arbitrary. Alex Grossman sitting right over there. We're going to give this cone score... to a tree. Name the K-pop. Here's how it works. You listen to us talk about, give our opinions, and then give a cone score rating between 1 and 10 golden cones of honor for our tree. Saba Pentantra, the K-pop tree. The cone score goes between 0 and 10 golden cones of honor. And because my producer just gave me the thumbs up, we're going to start with him. What do you think, Alex?
Well done, Casey.
Thank you. You know what I do sometimes? I'm sure you do because you listen to me. Mm. I say a word, and then instead of saying, oop, and then going back and correcting that word, I just change the syntax of the following sentence.
Absolutely.
To make the word make sense, and then circle back around.
You do a little loop-de-loop.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the Casey Clapp loop-de-loop.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah, it was completely unnecessary.
In classic Croson terms, this tree has really got it going on.
Wow, that is very classic Croson. You say that about a lot of things.
I do. But not to diminish the value of the statement, this tree is awesome. I love spines.
Yeah.
Or did we? They're prickles, right?
Technically, I believe they're prickles, correct.
Okay. Love me some prickles.
I have not actually 100% confirmed that, but I'm going to use my prowess to make an educated assertion.
The stuffing, Casey, the cotton of this cotton tree.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible. Of course, the cotton tree itself.
Yeah. The one of Freetown.
A sad tale. It's actually, my jaw dropped when I found out.
Yeah, mine did too,
that
honestly.
That is not an exaggeration. Very sad.
Yeah.
This huge, important, big, beautiful tree. Even if it wasn't important to people, it would be sad because it's a gorgeous, huge tree.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, Casey, I am feeling for the K-pop tree. Ooh, boy, Case, this has got to be a 9.5.
9.5?
Yeah, man.
Honestly, I'm stunned.
I love it.
That's incredible.
The cotton tree thing, the cotton tree of Freetown,
yeah,
that pushes it to the 9.5.
It gets it up there.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
And how often can you say that a single specimen is responsible for the cone
score?
For
moving the whole thing. Yeah. Wow.
Really shifts the dynamic.
Yeah, it totally does. Holy shit. All right. Yeah, so very good.
9.5 golden cones of honor. Casey,
right. Well,
as our resident expert, you will go second.
Okay. I appreciate this. So here's what I think about this tree. It should be planted just about everywhere.
Wow.
Because I like that a tree is essentially, I don't know, I dig, like you historically have said, you like when a tree kind of fights back a little bit.
Yeah.
And this tree, it doesn't do it in a way that's like vicious. It's just in a way that it looks like a bulldog with like a big chain around its neck with like all the spikes coming out. But it's just like the sweetest dog in the world.
That's a great analogy, Case.
This is kind of how I see this tree. So this, I think, should be a tree. I mean, obviously the speciosa species, cotton silk tree, but the silk floss tree, I think, or floss silk, whatever the names are.
This is taxonomic bingo.
Exactly. So Saba speciosa, the one that's planted like down in LA and all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
I think we should also be planting the K-pop tree in more different places because, yeah, hey, why not? You don't need just one species of elm. You can plant three different species of elm.
Word.
And the fact that it is like provides so much, it does grow to such proportions. I have to agree with you, Alex. I think this is a tree that is just, it's not underrated. I think people are rating it really high.
Yeah.
But I also think that it's a tree that could be planted a lot more.
That says something coming from you.
It really does. So I'm going to give it a 9.1.
Yeah.
For a K-pop. This is just such an amazing tree. The fact that there is a whole culture of people, a whole nation surrounding one individual, as well as an entire kind of cultural history behind the tree, going back, very, very long distance. I just think it's a tree that's worth, it's just worth everything about it. So, yeah, 9.1. You gave it a 9.5.
I sure did.
You know what that means, Alex. Rather, I should say, you out there know what that means. Wow, this is two in a row.
I have a good feeling about this month, Casey.
Jeez. God, do you
kind
know
of like what... an opposite Han Solo. I have a good feeling about this.
Oh, honestly, an opposite Han Solo, who would that be? Let's think on this for a while.
San Holo.
The
Swedish designer.
Is that a real person?
Could be.
Oh my God.
You don't know it's not. Casey, this means that the K-pop tree is officially inducted into the Golden Arboretum of Honor.
That's exactly right.
Because it received a 9+ from both hosts of Completely Arbitrary.
Stunning.
And with that, I will play the induction song. And we say to the K-pop, we honor you. Maybe my worst one yet.
That might have been, but we should make sure everyone knows that's played on a melodica. So when you accidentally chuckle into it, it goes.
That's the fun of the melodica, you know.
It really is. It betrays your inner feelings.
Yeah, I'm no piano player. Casey, that was our review.
He is also a piano.
That was our review of the K-pop. It is time for the Completely Arbitrary Q&A. Casey, this week our question comes from Orion on the Patreon.
Hello, Orion.
Hi, Orion. Orion says, I've long struggled to tell blue Colorado and white spruces apart at times.
Interesting.
Was wondering if you had any tips on a proper way to distinguish between the two of them. This is a specific question, Casey.
I mean, tree ID specific questions. So I'm like, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah. My introduction into this answer is, yeah. Do they look really similar?
They do. They can look similar. There are some minute differences.
Okay.
So the white spruce is commonly known as, well, actually I should say the white spruce, but it's uncommonly known as Picea glauca.
Right.
And Picea glauca is an adorable tree. And generally, if you're familiar with it around here in the greater Pacific Northwest, you know the conica variety, which is the dwarf Alberta spruce. And it is a variety that looks like a cone, like a tiny little triangular cone shape, like the traffic cone kind of shape. And
what is that called again?
Just conical. Just looks like a cone. Like a traffic cone?
Yeah, but isn't there a word for a tree that looks like a triangle with a stick?
Oh, yes. It would be an X-current growth form. Yes. Yeah, which they all have X-current growth forms, but this X-current really just means it has a central leader with individual branches coming off.
Okay.
And because the lower branches are set first and grow, everyone that's set up above it is like a year younger.
Right.
So as you grow up, you have everything creates a triangle because, yes. You know, they're kind of a year older and bigger go down.
Mm-hmm.
So the dwarf Alberta spruce does this, but everything it's like a dwarf of all those things. It does not grow very tall, and it does not have big branching. Everything is really compact, so it looks like some weird shrubby thing, but it is a perfect triangle. Like there's no non-uniformness to the whole thing. And you can look this up. Anyone can go find it.
Yeah.
They just look like these like topiary little cloudy Christmas tree things.
Yes, it does look topiary, yeah. But that's just the way they grow.
It's just the way they grow.
Wow.
Now, this is a variety. So someone found it and said, oh, sweet, we're going to grow this, and then grew it up. But it is so common in like front yards because people are like, oh, it's a tiny little tree. So they're like, oh, tree, check. Tiny and never has to do any work, check.
Wow.
So they plant it a lot. The funny thing is, it ends up reverting really often. And we haven't ever talked about this like in depth, but it's when you have the genetics revert back to the normal species on like some weird branch. And then you have like normal standard white Alberta spruce shoots coming off of like the side of what otherwise is this topiary like perfect thing.
Mm.
So you're like, are those two different trees? No.
Casey just showed me a photo of a white spruce that's reminiscent of Two-Face from the Batman series.
Yes, yeah, it totally is. Yeah, yeah.
One side is a straight slope, like a topiary looking slope.
Looks perfect.
And the other side is very natural looking and yeah. growing all in different angles and
the
things.
The shoots have, you know, the perfect amount of space growing out. Wow. Like they just look great.
That's so, really strange. We have never talked about
that. We have not. But you'll see this a lot if you see like a variegated tree that is all variegated or one color, and then there's one normal shoot of like green leaves coming off. In fact, I've also seen a dogwood where there were there was a white side and a pink side.
Fuck yeah, that's so cool.
Yeah, that was certainly a two-faced tree. It's pretty
nice.
Sweet.
So, okay, that's the white spruce.
Yes.
Now, the Colorado blue spruce, remind me of the scientific name of this one.
That is Picea pungens.
Pungens, right. Okay.
So we covered that last month in June. And Picea pungens is native to the kind of southern Rocky Mountains, and the white spruce grows further north in the Rocky Mountains and then way up in Alberta and Alaska. It goes all the way up into like the Yukon Territory and Alaska, like all really, really high up there to where they're essentially the last tree before the tundra.
Black spruce.
Black spruce is more on the east side, right. But it comes over, so they definitely converge. But okay. If you're on the west, moving down latitude, it's going to be more white spruce.
Okay. And I do want to remind people something that I often have to remind myself of, which is that when you say this tree grows in this area, and then just north, this tree grows.
Yeah.
There is no border patrol on where these things grow that makes sure that they can't cross over. There's a gradient effect, right? Yeah,
exactly.
Where you'll be in white spruce country, and then suddenly you'll see blue spruces here and there.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you'll see less and less white spruces and more blue spruces, and then all blue spruces.
Yeah. And they also will hybridize sometimes, but I think they hybridize with the white spruce hybridizes with the Sitka spruce.
Wow.
And I think sometimes the Engelmann, but I can't recall off the top of my head.
So I do want to refocus, Casey.
Yes.
And say what the different, give us three key ID differences between these two trees.
Done and done. So your Alberta or white spruce, Picea glauca, generally will have a smaller, more condensed canopy. So they are trees that really don't get giant and wide. Their canopies generally tend to stay very very small and spire-like.
Cool.
The other thing is their branches, as their name suggests, or their needles, are generally blue all over on all sides. They're four-sided square needles. So they're generally going to be kind of a little bit more blue, whereas the Colorado spruce tends to be normally more on the bluish green side.
Mm.
But of course, you can find high elevations where it's really dry, very bright, bright blue needles for Colorado blue spruce.
Wow.
So they can be a little bit confusing in that regard, but generally Colorado spruce are going to have longer needles. Way longer, and the real coup de grace to tell them apart is the cone.
I don't mean to embarrass you, but it's pronounced coupe de grâce.
Oh, I'm sorry, coupe de grâce. So the coupe de grâce here, everyone, is that the cones of the blue spruce, Colorado blue spruce, are about 3 or so inches long.
Okay.
They are papery scaled. Mm-hmm. Their scales are a tannish color, and they're not really intensely woody, and they're fringed. So all the scales kind of start out perfectly circular, but then as they dry, they kind of get wavy and fringed at the end. And they're quite pleasant to just kind of move your fingers down.
And I've got the other side of that, may I?
Yes.
The white spruce cones are kind of the opposite of everything you said.
Yeah.
Maybe the same length?
A little bit the same length, yeah.
But they are more woody.
Yes.
And they have more rounded, smooth scales. That's as opposed right. to that crinkly paper scale.
Perfect. Yeah. That's exactly it.
So they look a little like hemlock cones.
They
actually do.
They look really like hemlock cones.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're spot on.
They're beautiful.
If you don't know the difference between, say, a mountain hemlock
yeah.
and any of these spruces, or rather the Colorado, or rather the Engelmann spruce, where the mountain hemlock and Engelmann spruce grow in the same spot,
mm-hmm.
you can very often be like, well, which is which?
Mm.
But as soon as you know what you're looking for in the needles, which we're not going to compare those because it'll just confuse everyone, that is the big thing. So the needles on the, rather, three things. The form on the white spruce is generally smaller, and it's a little bit bluer overall.
Okay.
The needles are a little bit shorter, and the cones are woody, and they are not fringed. They're like a nice, perfect circle. The Colorado blue spruce, the canopy is a little bit wider. They grow a little bit further south, and their needles are a little bit longer. They tend to be more on the greenish side than the bluish side. There are some examples or some exceptions. You'll just have to think about
there
it.
There always are.
As soon as you see one, you're like, well, this might be, look at the cone, because the Colorado blue spruce will have that papery cone with all the fringed scales.
I will say maybe look at the cone first.
Yes. Oh, that'll set you off just like that.
Yeah.
You'll be like, I think this is a spruce. Look at the cone and you'll know one way or the other.
As I've said before. Go to the cones.
Go to the cone. He says it all the time. A lot of people don't know that.
Thank you. Off pod. Thank you so much, Orion. We really appreciate the question. If you have a question for us, join up on the Patreon.
Yeah.
It's the place to be. Patreon.com/arbitrarypod. That's ArbitraryPod pod. The best way to support the podcast monetarily. It's like a PBS donation.
Exactly.
That recurs every month and you get monthly rewards essentially for supporting.
Yeah, you know what we should do one What's time, that? Alex? We should do a like a what do they do on NPR? They have like their
their telethons,
their phone fundraising things.
Yeah.
We should do an entire episode on that where, hey, we're just going to pause our normal programming and we'll just do an hour of asking for money.
Well, it has to be it has to be like a variety show.
So
like local like artists come in and like have to describe what they're doing.
It's radio.
Yeah.
Anyway, join the Patreon if you want to support the show. Otherwise, just listen to all the ads on silent.
Thank you, Casey. Of course, the kind of crown jewel of the Patreon is the Cone of the Month Club. Every month we send you a sticker. It is a conifer cone, a different species every month, illustrated by a different cool artist every month. We have like 25, I think, right now.
26, I think.
26.
I think this month will be 27.
Holy shit. That's amazing. That is the best way to support the podcast. You get them in the mail every month. We get $10. We shake hands. Metaphysically speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And you also get two bonus episodes if you join at that tier. So it's a great deal. Casey Clapp.
Alex Croson.
That was our discussion on the
on the K-pop tree.
I was one step behind on my muscle memory. Thank you for talking about this tree, Casey. It was a real delight. Although ultimately a sad story. But I think that there's a lot to celebrate with this tree.
There is. Everything that is an ending is also a new beginning.
Well said, Casey. And with that, we say this is the end of this episode of Completely Arbitrary. We'll see you on the next beginning. Bye now.
Later. Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp.
Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by Aves and the Mini Vandals.
And you can support the podcast at patreon.com/arbitrarypod.
And find additional readings at completelyarbitrary.com. Thanks for listening.